The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Each day at this time, it's my joy to have a guest in the studio, and today I have a friend of well over 30 years, Charlie Fitzgerald. Charlie is a CFP. Now, we're going to explain exactly what that is in a moment. Charlie is with a company that he co-owns. It is Moisan Fitzgerald Tamayo, LLC. That's the official name. But Charlie is a financial expert and is so great to have my friend in the studio. First time we've done this since I've been back to Orlando. So welcome, my friend.
It is my privilege to be here, Mike. Our friendship going back to the many, many years, I mean, back to the mid-80s, really.
Yes, 85.
Yes, and the timing of our friendship is very important to me because that's when I was coming to faith in Christ. And so to have you there during my early days of my walk was a privilege. And the example that you were to me, your wife, your family, was inspiring to me. And maybe I'll talk a little more about that later, but happy to be here, Mike.
Wow. It is very kind words, and I thank you so much for that. I remember the day, and we had moved down not terribly long before ourselves from Indiana. So my wife and I are in this church service that we had come down to be a part of from Indiana is where we moved from. And in that process, we're in this service, and there stands up Charlie Fitzgerald, and you stood up, you were a guest, and I think that was your first Sunday there, and it wasn't long after that. I know you came as a result of a friend's invitation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Boy, isn't it amazing how our friends play such a role in our lives? I mean, you and mine as well,
right.
But I'm just so grateful to realize that a friend, Ken was his name, Ken invites you to a church service and starts talking to you about the Lord.
That's exactly right. I came to faith at about age 24, and shortly thereafter, I met Ken at my work at AT&T here in Maitland Center, actually. And when I started asking him questions about his knowledge of Christianity and the faith, he jumped on me like, wow, this is great. we were next door neighbors in our cubes there at work. And he kind of took me under his wing and discipled me for a good period of time. And I was trying to find a church. I knew I needed to find a church. And he invited me to join him at the church that he was attending. Household of Faith was the name of the church at the time. It's now Metro Life Church, which still exists today and does well in Castleberry. But that was my very beginning, an introduction to the church. Also meeting Danny Jones and then meeting you, of course.
Mm-hmm. And through that, you continue to attend the church services. And then we had a very fun Saturday trip down the Wakaiva River, as I recall. And it was on that trip that we'd planned a baptismal service for several people that had recently come to faith. And you were one of those.
I'll never forget it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so this was a father-child trip down the Wakaiva River, and I had asked Danny Jones a couple weeks earlier that I told him I wanted to be water baptized, and he said, well, why don't we wait and do that on this trip down the Wakaiva? And we stopped about halfway down the trip in this beautiful bank, sandy, you know, the nice sandy bottom with the clear water, and there were three of us that morning that got water baptized, and that was a experience I'll never forget. And it was wonderful to do it out in nature on the Wakaiva River.
Well, you know, we're talking about this. I love having people share their story as you're doing right now, because I think it helps us all to connect a little bit better if we don't know the person, and to hear this story. And you were a single guy still at this point. And what I loved about you, Charlie, in that time frame when we were kind of getting to know each other, of course, we ended up being tennis partners, and I don't know how many times we've been on the court together, a lot. And then we've played golf. You've put up with my bad golf game.
That's okay. I'm okay with that. Gives me more time to think about my next shot.
That's right. That's right. You've endured all of that. In fact, I'm getting ready to play soon in a tournament coming up that is also going to be a fun experience for me, probably not for the team that I'm playing with. And my goodness, that day I'll never forget it, because your dad was with us, and your dad holed a shot from way, way away from the green. I mean, it was just one of those unbelievable, like 125 yards or
so. You've got a great memory, Mike.
Oh, I remember this one because I'd never seen that done before. He just hits this beautiful chip shot to the green, and we had a full vision of the whole trip there. And that thing just dropped right in the hole.
I had forgotten about that. Oh, and I'm so glad you have that memory of my dad. Of course, yeah. As you know, he passed away about 10 years ago this summer. And I miss him badly.
Mm-hmm.
But he was instrumental, too, in my early faith. In fact, when I first came to Christ, he was not in a good place. And I had just read, in fact, if you don't mind, I'll just share the story.
No,
I read a book by an author named Dennis Whately. It was kind of a self-help book.
Yes.
And it was called The 10 Seeds of Greatness. And so this book had biblical underpinnings to it. And as I'm reading it, it was exposing me to some biblical truths, but it wasn't like in my face with scriptures and verses and things like that. Well, when we got to the end of the book, he had us do a self-assessment. And there were 8 areas that we were being assessed on our personal life and how balanced of a life we have. And it reviewed, you know, where you stood with your finances and your personal health and your family relationships and your spiritual life and your community involvement and all these things that make up a balanced life, right? So I filled this test out, scored it, and found that I scored low in 2 areas that really were an awakening to me. Area 1 was my community involvement. I had very little that I was doing in the community as a 24-year-old man. Mm-hmm. And I would learn that's vital to be involved in the community, mm-hmm. you know, the local, state, whatever, national. Then the other area I scored low on was spiritual. I had no spirit. My spiritual life was just like nothing. And that book is what was the spark that kind of got me thinking, I need to get my life together with God. I need to find a church. I need to read my Bible. And I was brought up in a Christian home, but I had drifted away. So that was kind of the catalyst that brought me back to pursuing my faith.
Mm-hmm.
I shared the story with my dad, and he wasn't that receptive of it at the time. He wasn't in a very good place. But a year later, he called me and he said, "Hey, you want to join me at a Bible study?" And that was and he came to faith, and he ended up being a great factor in my life for many years, encouraging me in my walk and my growth.
Well, he was a dear man. He was a doctor in the area.
That's right.
And so he would have been, I'm sure, known by a lot of our listeners who have been in Central Florida for a long time. And he was not only a dear person because he's your dad, and obviously that would be the case, but he was a fun individual to be around. And I tell you what, I think about that day, it's one of those things that I've just never forgotten. I mean, the joy of that moment of getting to see another person get to do what would be a dream shot. Mm-hmm. And he did it. And he was so cool and humble about it, but it was just an awesome moment. And I've never forgotten it. And your dad was dear. I was down visiting one time from Gainesville to Metro Life Church.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not long before your dad passed away. And he and I got to rekindle our friendship by standing and probably causing all of you to be late for lunch,
mm-hmm,
because
sure.
We were talking and talking. I believe it was on Mother's Day, and we were talking, and he just was that kind of a guy. And then not long after that, I heard the news that he had passed, and I was so grateful for those conversations. So these are moments in time that really do affect us. And I know even our listeners who may not know you or have ever heard of your dad are still touched by that, because the spillover effect really is true. And in all of our friendships, in all of our relationships, there are possibilities of lives being changed just by what we say, by how we invite them to events, by accompanying them. And I think so often in this day, Charlie, people forget to stop and smell the roses along the way on a day-to-day journey.
Right.
But yeah, it's important that we do that.
Yeah, it's the relationships that we have. I think most of us who are Christians can look back in our early days and identify a couple people, if not more, that were instrumental in our coming to faith,
mm-hmm,
you know, and answering our questions and helping us and encouraging us. And that was what you know, you were. It's what Danny Jones was to me. Mm. It's what my friend Ken Allen, his name, last name Ken Allen, and of course his family. And not to leave my mom out. My mom was a tremendous factor. She is the matriarch of our family still to this day. She's 86 years old, living in Winter Park in the same home she's been in for over 50 years. And she is an enormous blessing to me and my sisters and all of our family.
That's wonderful. And thank God for the heritage that you have there. And even hearing in the same home for over 50 years, what a treat that is for you to get to go back there.
Yes.
Because that place has got to be just a minefield of loaded memories for
it
you.
Is. Yeah.
Just a
it
lot
is.
Of fun.
Yes.
Well, it's great. And there's one other thing about Charlie for our listeners that you just have to know. Charlie has always been a man who is serious about his faith, a man who studies. And Charlie, there are very few dreams that I've ever had. Back in the day when you and I were working closely together, when I was in Orlando the first time before I moved to Gainesville, and we were privileged to get to work together. I was a pastor at the church, and you were one of the leaders and still are a leader in the church. And at that time, you were leading a group that I was kind of like a pastoral overseer. Mm-hmm. And I got to see you a lot during that time. But there are very few dreams that I've ever had in my life that I could remember later on. One of those, it would be a dream that I had that involved you. And it was the weirdest thing. I was in this dream, and I remember it today just like it happened a moment ago. I was knocking on your door, and I could look inside the window, and there you were. And you know what you were doing inside your house? You had the Bible open in front of you and your notepad, which you've always taken notes. A lot of notes. You handwrite the notes. You don't type them, or at least you did back in that time frame.
Still a lot of handwriting.
And I looked through in my dream. I looked through that window, and there you were writing out notes, studying the Bible. And I thought to myself, Charlie is a student of the Word. And that is an image that to this day, almost 30 years, at least 25 years ago, man, that happened, and I still remember it. The way we study the Bible, the way we love the Bible, the way we talk about God and the Word, that also brings an impact on people.
Yes, it does. You know, when I first came to the Lord in 1985, I can remember just being an enormous sponge of just reading and reading the Bible, reading all kinds of anything I could get my hands on. And that it continues to this day still. I still am reading a lot. I'm working my way through the New Testament again right now. I'm in the book of Romans, which is a wonderful book. I'm so glad that it was written. You shouldn't take these things for granted, that we have these materials, the Word of God that we can read and be inspired by. But yes, that's a very important part of my life, is keeping up with, the Bible and such.
You know, it's encouraging to hear that even when you read that book by Dennis Whately, and a bit provoked by it because it pointed out the need that we all have to be spiritually deep,
yes,
that there should be a depth in our lives about God and about His ways. But, that was then, that was 1985, and now we flash forward to 2021, and, there's a lot of young people today who are experiencing the very thing that happened to you. It seems like in the middle, there might have been not as many young people really interested. But everything I'm hearing today, there is a movement of God among young adults and among teens. And there is a reaching back now for the things of faith that you experienced yourself at that age.
Yeah, that's good to hear. And we're seeing that at our church, that we're Metro Life Church too. We're seeing that with the young people there. There's a growth. There's a spirit of inquiry, and there's involvement of our young people in the church, which is so important to have. You've got us older folks that have been there for a long time. And you see the baton being handed off to, the next generations, actually. And that's encouraging to see, even happening at the pastoral level with Danny's recent retirement and Aaron Osborne taking the role of leading, and now Chris Jesse, who was a very young person in the church when I first started the 10. He might have been 10 years old, maybe, you know. So it's amazing to see how the baton is handed down.
It's exciting, and I know for Danny, being the friend that he is to both of us, I know that it was in his heart really from the get-go of that church being formed, that
That's right.
It would be a multi-generational church, one that would not be a single-generation church, as sadly many are.
You know, the one thing that Danny still remains engaged in the church, which is maybe a little unusual if you think about it mm-hmm. overall, at least I feel like it is. He retires, but he's still an elder. He's still engaged in the church. He's still counseling Chris Jesse, encouraging him, consulting, you know, being the consultant, which gives me even greater confidence in the future that's there for Chris, because he's got Danny, you know, pouring into his life. And that will bode well for the church and for the future, I believe.
I agree with you completely. And that is such an exciting and unusual thing to see happen. But he's there, and we are so glad that he is. I'm talking to Charlie Fitzgerald today. Charlie is the one of the owners of Moisan Fitzgerald Tamayo, and they are a firm that deals with financial planning. Charlie is a CFP, and I'm going to get a little bit more at the beginning of the next segment into just the exciting things that I recall about how Charlie moved from being a worker at AT&T to being a CFP. And again, Charlie is a man of vision and faith, and that's why he's on this program today. I hope you're enjoying this just a smidgen as much as I'm enjoying this. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Don't go away. We'll be right back. In the studio today with Charlie Fitzgerald. Charlie is a CFP, that's a certified financial planner with Moisan Fitzgerald Tamayo. And he's been a partner in this. I've got to start off this next segment, Charlie. When I met you, you along with Ken, I believe at that time, who was instrumental in your early walk and inviting you to the church service in which we met, you were all workers at AT&T at a time just... Well, not long after we met, AT&T goes through this massive change.
They split the company up into a lot of pieces, and the Bell operating companies all spun off. And it was a time of upheaval of a behemoth, which was AT&T, you know.
Yes, it's like the big company starting, Ma Bell breaking apart in a way. But even before that, you have to kind of go back and dial your involvement in this next season of your life. Back a while earlier, because you had begun, even though you had a good career and you were doing all right at AT&T, but there was this idea of something that you wanted to do, and that was to be this CFP,
the certified financial planner. Yep.
Which I remember you telling me back in the day, that's kind of a hard designation to get.
It took a bit of effort to get it, yes. And I'd graduated from the University of Florida, had a finance degree.
Go Gators.
Yes, sir. And about a year out of college, my dad, he was an internal medicine doctor here in Winter Park for many, many years, for decades. He was having a financial plan done by a firm out of California that specialized in doing financial plans for health professionals. And so he said, "Hey, Charlie, you're the expert in finance. Why don't you come along and help do this financial plan with me?" And I'd never heard of this before. And in doing the financial plan with my dad, both of our eyes actually got opened up to this as a profession. And we started doing financial planning, moonlighting the two of us together for a couple years there, serving his doctor friends here in Central Florida. And eventually I met my wife, Lisa, a couple of years later, and decided that moonlighting financial planning wasn't maybe as important as dating her and getting to know her. So I laid it down. But my goal all along then was to pursue this as a profession, as a career. Still a young man, kind of hard to do on your own, but to, you know, have someone trust you with their wealth when you're 25 years old. But that was my goal, to become a financial planner.
And I know that to get that, it was a lot of study, a lot of work, a lot of testing. And in a real way, it'd be very similar to when an attorney is really going through the bar exam. You had to go through the financial bar exam, if you will, and get all of those certifications done. And I know it was a, lab- a labor, but one of love for you.
It took a while. I did it slowly and gradually over time, getting the education materials done. There were six exams at the time to get the CFP mark, and got through all of those by 1992. So it took a while, but I did get the CFP certification, and I've had it ever since, of course.
Well, here's the thing that's so amazing to me, is that right at the time when you are getting all of this done, this big change happens with a lot of your friends. And again, you're a coworker at AT&T, and people are being bought out. Explain what happened there.
Yeah, so there's actually a step that comes before that, Mike. When in 1996, I was presented an opportunity to take an early out package from AT&T, and there was a lot of downsizing going on in the company for several years leading up. And I was given an opportunity to take an early out package, a severance pay, and leave the company, basically.
They pay you to leave the company.
They paid me about a half a year's salary and covered my health insurance, things like that. And it was a difficult decision to make. We had two children. My wife was full-time homemaker at home. She wasn't working. She had a baby in the oven, so we had little Casey on the way. And here I am thinking about making a career change and finally jumping into financial planning. And it wasn't something I had initiated on my own. It was something that was kind of put on me January of 96 when my boss told me that I was on the hit list to leave the firm if I didn't find a job in the company. So that's when I thought, okay, this is God's way of pushing me out of the nest to go be a financial planner and do what really I want to do. And after a couple of months, made the decision, yes, that's what I want to do. And then I had a job offer to stay at AT&T. And it's like, now what do I do? Because I can stay or I can go. But I'm going to something I have no idea how I'm going to survive, if it's even going to work. You know, hanging a shingle out and saying I'm a financial planner doesn't mean I'm going to succeed. So I remember you in that day being very helpful to me. And I remember waking up one morning about 4 a.m., couldn't sleep, and trying to make the decision, should I leave? Should I stay? What do I do? You know, as far as should I stay at AT&T or should I go ahead with this career, this new career change? And the word I believe that I had from the Lord that morning was, it's time to go. You're going to be fine. Don't worry. You'll be fine. And it was a page and a half. And I remember sharing that with you. I'm not sure if you remember that or not.
I do remember a little bit of that.
You read the page and a half letter from God, if
of
I could call it that.
Letter.
It was a handwritten. Yes. I still have the copy of it for posterity. And it basically, I believe, you know, in faith, the Lord was speaking to me and saying, it's time for you to take the plunge and go. And just trust me. Things are going to be fine. I've got it. You know, I've got you. You're going to be all right. And I was frightened to death. I really was. I was really scared. And I didn't want to fail and have to go back to the corporate world with my tail between my legs because I couldn't succeed in starting this practice or this new business. So that was a big step. And I remember my dad encouraging me, saying, son, you know, you're going to be fine. Your problem is you're going to have trouble with growth. You're going to have more coming at you that you'll know what to do with. And I was like, oh, great. You know, he's obviously got more faith in me than I can imagine. Well, 2 years later, what you're talking about happened. There was an early out package offered to a lot of my fellow AT&T friends. And that summer of 1998, I had more business coming at me for financial planning help and what to do with these large pension buyouts. And that literally threw me over the hump. And at that point, I knew, okay, I'm here to stay now. You know, and I had a lot of clients, and I had to stop taking new clients. I had to close my practice temporarily because it was more than I could handle. So that's probably getting to the point you're remembering there.
Yeah, and it is. And it is so amazing how God prepared you for what was just like a flood of work that had you not started years earlier,
exactly.
Had you not prepared and taken all those classes and taken all those tests and get your certifications all worked out all along the way, when that big moment happened, it would have fallen in someone else's lap. As it is, all of these people knew you.
Yes.
Because of your relationship with them at AT&T.
That's true. When I left, probably half the people I was reaching out to, and I researched, you know, where they lived, got their addresses, and I was sending them letters. That was the old way of prospecting, was to send a letter out, and I had a mailing list of about 1,100 names. anyone that came to our wedding in 1988, they were getting a letter from Charlie saying, I'm a financial planner. If you need help, come see me, you know. Mm-hmm. And about half that list were my AT&T colleagues that I had got to know over the 13 previous years. And many of them already knew me as the finance guy because I was doing finance and budgets and all that kind of stuff, you know, in the firm. So that wasn't a strange thing to see me doing personal financial planning, having done that previously, you know, in the AT&T world. But those early AT&T clients really helped me get established. And still to this day, about 30 to 40% of my clients that I'm caring for in our firm are my AT&T friends. And many of them are still coming. I've had, just in the last couple of years, I've had three or four clients from the AT&T world that finally called me. I'm like, why did you wait 20 years to call me? You know, so
it's crazy how that works.
I refer to the AT&T community as my blueberry patch, you know, and I say my, it really was God setting it up for me. Yeah. And so that is, you know, I have to say that because that's the truth of it.
Well, the Christian worldview impact of all of this and why I think it's so important to see is that the Bible teaches us that if we are faithful and that we follow the Lord and we listen as you have done with all of this, that he's going to lead you. You know, the steps of a righteous man, the Bible says, are directed by God, and you've been led by the Lord to do all of these things and to make these relationships, and you've been faithful to do it. And it's just so easy now in hindsight. I know that in the moments where you had to make a decision, it looked like a big leap, but this is certainly one of those situations to where in hindsight, when you look back, it was the best decision in the world, and you could never have made a better one.
You know, the analogy that I use for it, it's like a child standing on the side of the pool, and the father's, you know, in the water, maybe 6 feet away, and with arms out saying, jump, I got you, you know. And the child is looking at the water and realizing this is scary. But there's that moment where the child looks into the eyes of the father and takes the leap, takes the jump. Now, that's the moment when the father is not going to do anything else but make sure he gets his hands on that child to reassure the child and to show the child, see, I was here.
Right.
And that's really, for me, what happened. And it was an opportunity where I think God showed his faithfulness to me in a very real way.
You know, in Psalm 73, Charlie, as you're talking about that, and I pulled it up because I feel that what we're talking about today is exactly what is conveyed in this most wonderful psalm, a psalm of Asaph. And it says there, beginning in verse 1, it says, truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. And here's why. And I'm just going to speed ahead a little bit. He said, I was envious of the arrogant when I saw how they were prospering and they didn't seem to have problems. Their bodies were fat and sleek, although that would not be in today's culture to be a really great thing. Sleek, yes, not fat. Okay, so we like to be trim and in health. I mean, that's the way we would say that. But that's was the description of prosperity in that culture. And that's exactly, and it says their pride is their necklace. So they wore all of these things out. They looked good. They were healthy. They were prospering. And Asaph is saying, I'm looking at all of them, and I'm thinking, I'm not there. That's not where I am. And it goes on, and he says that I really started thinking bad about all of this. He says, but when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I discerned therein, meaning those that were only after their own good, only after their own prosperity, only after their own wants. And it takes that moment of when you discern their good, or you discern what is right from the Lord into the sanctuary. God shows us as he did you. I mean, you could have stayed where you were, but the Lord was leading you, and it took your time with God that early morning.
Yes.
I think that's an important thing that we all need to have in our lives, a willingness to get alone with God and say, God, what are you leading me to do?
Yes. And as I learned, sometimes the things he'll ask you to do are frightening, you know, and that's where, as I said earlier, you have an opportunity to see his faithfulness in your life like you've never seen it before. And for me personally, that really was, that period of time in my life was probably one of the most profound times of my life, period, to look back at that. And feeling, like I said, scared, not knowing what the future would be. I remember after I'd made the decision, I told my supervisor at AT&T that I'm going to take the package and leave. And he's like, well, are you serious? Because you know you've got a job offer to stay. I said, no, I feel like I need to go. And I remember that that weekend that followed, I'm out mowing my yard and I'm thinking about that conversation, and I just stopped the mower in the yard and I just stood there and I looked at my house and I thought, what have I done? Why am I leaving this nice cush job with benefits to go do something? And I have no idea how this is going to work out. I don't have a single client. You know, I'm just taking this leap of faith. And I can remember also standing by my mailbox on one other occasion and looking at the house and saying, we may not be living in this house much longer because I just don't know how this is going to work out. I had enough money saved to last us about a year and a half, which was great, but that was going to run out quick. And so it really was a scary moment. And, you know, I did make a mistake through that period working too hard. And you actually confronted me in a loving way about me working too many hours and this issue of neglecting your family. Mm-hmm. And this was something, I'm not sure if you remember that, Mike.
I wouldn't have thought about that up front, but I remember time frame.
Yeah, and I can remember us having conversations, and, you know, as couples, we would go out together, you and Cindy, me and Lisa. And I remember this point in time where you looked at me, Charlie, and said, you know, your children are going to begin to suffer if you continue to work this hard, and certainly your marriage will be. And you use the word, you know, you're like entering into potential neglect here. You need to slow down, quit working so many hours, find a way to delegate, find a way to, you know, reduce your hours and get home and be with your family. And that was a loving correction from you that I took to heart. It took me a while, unfortunately, to install that, because that was a lot for me to do. But within time, I did. Mm-hmm. And my life, you know, got back into balance.
Well, I tell you what, though, that would have been only given in love and only because I cared so much for you. And I'm grateful. I mean, this is...
this is what friends do, Mike. Yeah, I mean, friends, yeah. when you're a real friend, you've got to have moments still where you can lovingly tell your friend that, you know, you need to rethink about what you're doing.
Hey, I'm worried about you.
you encouraged, I mean, you earned that in my life. Mm. You know, you had given me encouragement. You'd give me 100 pounds of encouragement, you know, and friendship over the years, which gave you a place in my life even more so to speak those loving moment, you know, of concern. And so it was balanced and beautifully done, and I'll never forget it. And I appreciate you for doing that for me.
Well, thank you. That's very honoring, and I appreciate that. And I just wish that every bit of advice I would have ever given would have had the same result. But I know that's not the case. But I'm grateful that God did that, and how good of God to do that in your life. You know, being a financial planner in this day and age, Charlie, it's got to have a boatload of challenges, even thinking about all of the different tax laws that have changed. And, you know, with a difference in we've had a real up and down a couple of years, maybe the last 20 years, and in terms of administrations and the kind of like the financial pictures. So you guys have been riding through Democrat presidents, you've been riding through Republican presidents.
Yes, we have.
You've been riding through times in which the stock market was booming and bullish, and then at
crashing
times it's been crashing, being
and
a real bear. Yeah. So you've been walking through all of that, and there has to be a guiding sense of peace, and that's something that I know you were working to find in that little stretch that we just mentioned. But that's true for all of your clients as well. They've got to be able to find a place of peace in the middle of turbulent waters.
That's true. We've been doing this. I've been doing financial planning full time now since 1996. So that's 25 years now. Hard to believe. And we've seen stock market crashes. We saw the .com crash in 2000. We lived through the mortgage crisis of 2008, 2009, which was unbelievable. You know, 18 months of the stock market going down 60%. That's pretty, you know, unsettling for many. And for us, too, as financial planners that are managing people's money. And then this crash we had last, the Corona crash we had back last spring, we mm-hmm. saw a 40% decline in the stock market in a matter of 1 month. And so we've seen some pretty serious, you know, down moments in the market. And we, as wealth managers, we know how to handle those situations, and our client portfolios did fine. Everyone recovered fine and everyone did well. There's peace to be found, peace of mind to be found, having your financial plan in order, having your portfolio in a nice diversified manner that will survive, you know, the down markets when they occur. And as financial planners, we're also concerned about not only having present peace of mind, but preserving quality of life for someone in their financial plan, so that when they're retired, they're taking, you know, only so much money out of the portfolio that we would say is sustainable, that will last you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And then also this aspect of legacy. Clients are thinking that, obviously, you know, if you're retired and you're 65 years old, if you live 25, 30, 35 years, that's about all we got left on this planet. And what am I leaving at the end of the day? You know, what's the legacy that I'm leaving for my family? And legacy isn't simply just financial things, but there is a financial element to legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, what am I leaving my mm-hmm. children? And first off, what am I leaving my wife if I go first, you know? But what am I leaving my family, and doing that in a way that honors, you know, your family and honors God?
You know, that is such a heady topic that I think the reason that more people don't get into the kind of planning that really they should, and I'm one of those, I waited too long, and I think it's almost like two things. And I go back often to a conversation I had with a guy that was in the hospital, and I went to visit him at the behest of a friend. And this guy looked like the picture of health when I found him in the room, and I introduced myself to him. And I asked him later in our conversation why it was that he had lived his life without ever going. And it was funny. You talk about having a relationship that you earn the kind of questions. Well, I realized with this man that I didn't have that kind of time to develop that,
mm-hmm.
but God gave me great favor as I'm talking with mm-hmm. him. And he made a statement, Charlie, I never forgot. He said, I guess the reason I never got serious about asking God anything or seeking the will of the Lord or trying to plan rightly in my life is I thought I was going to live forever.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think that is a basis why many people don't plan for the retirement years, is they just think, I've got lots of time. I'll put that off to another day. But they don't realize that in financial planning, what you do today greatly impacts 30, 40 years down the line.
If you want to, if you want to look at it in a very objective way, you can take out a piece of paper and draw a line across it and put your date of birth on the far left side mm-hmm. and then draw your line all the way across out to your date of death, you know. And on that piece of paper, you know, mark off the decades, 10, 20, 30, all the way out to 90 maybe. And then mark on that paper where you are right now. And then look at, realistically, how much time do you really have left on this earth? You know, mm-hmm. it is kind of a...
That's a shocking thing.
It's a shocking thing to sit down and think about
yeah.
that. You know, if you play the game of golf, I'm 60 years old. And, you know, if I make it to 90, like three of my grandparents, then, you know, 2/3 of my life is done. And if I do my math correctly, 2/3 of 18 is 12. So I'm on the 13th hole, you know, I'm on the back nine
yeah,
for sure.
You've already gone through the bathroom break and the snack.
Yeah. So I'm on the 13th hole at the Masters. That's the beautiful azalea hole, the dog leg left, you know, it's par five. So I'm on that hole right now. And if I live to a full life of 90, and, mm-hmm. and of course I have to remember that I don't know how long I'm going to live. I've got friends that are gone already from this, or
yeah.
classmates that have
yeah.
lost. And it's just, you know, so we don't have that guarantee, but we do need to be very mindful that, you know, like the billions before us on this planet, we're not going to be here forever. We're going to see our demise. And we should think wisely about how we're spending our final days and what are we doing with the time, treasure, talent that God has given us and for what remains.
Well, I'm talking to Charlie Fitzgerald. Charlie is with Moisan Fitzgerald Tamayo, and he is not only a great financial planner and his company is just rock solid, but more importantly to me, he is a great believer in God and is able to blend the wisdom that we need for things in the world like financial planning with the Word of God and what God would want us to do. And that is a combination, friends, that is worth listening to. We're going to get to some very practical things in our final segment in a moment. Practical in the sense of their impact and effect on you, and may even delay or change some of your immediate plans about filing your taxes. So let's hear more from Charlie on that in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're in tune to The Shepherd. In the studio today with Charlie Fitzgerald from Moisan Fitzgerald Tamayo. Charlie is a financial planner extraordinaire. In my mind, he's been at this thing for a long time, and his company is well-known, very respected, and it's just exciting to see how this company has grown. Charlie, you've seen so many things, and I know that one of the reasons is because you guys have a really complete look at involvement, not only with your clients, but you're involved with them directly, but you're also involved with Central Florida in a big mm-hmm. picture way. And you guys, and to use a colloquial term that's very popular today, you guys give back to our community and in a reinvesting way of knowledge on many fronts. Tell us about a few of those.
Yeah, you're reminding me, a couple of years ago, Charles Schwab and Company recognized our firm as a trailblazer firm, which is they do national recognitions, maybe two or three or four different firms every year. And we were honored to receive that. And part of the trailblazer firm was the recognizing a firm in the country that had given back to the community. And that is one of the hallmarks of our firm, which I'm really proud to say. And that would be different partners in the firm are doing a variety of things in the community. My partner, Dan Moisand, has been very big, you know, on the national scene as a former president for the Financial Planning Association. He's currently serving on CFP board. And there's different things that I've been able to do, too. And this goes back to the book that I was referring in the beginning, the Dennis Waitley book, and I identified my deficiency in supporting the community. Well, I've made up for that deficiency the last 35 years on both the local, state, and national level. And the local level that I would point out, one thing that's really I'm very proud about is changing the laws in Florida to require all public high schools, all 550 public high schools in Florida now have to offer financial literacy education as an elective. And this is huge. This is something that the Florida Council of Economic Education was doing. The Financial Planning Association got involved with this. And a couple of years ago, we got the law changed. So now that's happened. We are now wanting that to be successful, but we'd love it to be where to graduate from high school that you would have to take, you would have to pass a financial literacy course.
It makes perfect sense.
As a requirement.
Yeah, it does.
So that's something that we're that I'm very excited about. We've also helped change laws in Florida to protect seniors from abusive annuity sales. This is a big issue about 10 years ago that we were at the forefront of, that I was very involved with. And we also got a law put in place that allowed the insurance department to remove the license of an insurance agent who had committed fraud over on the securities side of the world. And believe it or not, that wasn't even in place 10 years ago, where you could have somebody who was a broker who had done terrible things, committed fraud, forged signatures, whatever, but still had an insurance license and was selling annuities and life insurance. I'm like, what? How can that be? And the insurance department in Florida didn't have the authority to remove the license of somebody who had done something like that. We got that law changed.
Wow.
So that was very satisfying.
Again, a very practical need.
Yep. So that's just examples of things that I've been able to be a part of to help the community. One thing that I'm very proud of, too, that's recent is just about 5 years ago, I went up to the University of Florida, which is my, you know, I'm the alum there, of course. And I went to the business college. I met Dr. John Banco there, and I said, Doctor, why don't we have a financial planning program in the business college? And so we started talking about this. Well, now, just recently, they have rolled out, they've received a really nice endowment from a professor there, and they're using that money to establish a financial planning. It's going to be a wealth specialization in the business college now. So when the student gets into the wealth specialization program at University of Florida, they can graduate and sit immediately for the CFP board exam. Mm-hmm. So that's another very satisfying thing that I've been able to be a part of.
Well, that is exciting, thinking about all those students. And the reason I said practical is that so often, you know, kids talk about math in a way that I'm never going to use it. People talk about parts of their education that aren't really ever going to be put into practice as they are actually living or doing their job. But I tell you what you're talking about, what you do is affecting every person in their life who doesn't need to plan on getting older.
You know, if there's one lesson I would love that I always share with young people when I talk to them, and I'm not sure many young people are listening in right now, but if we have more parents and grandparents listening, maybe they can pass this lesson on to their kids. And it's called the rule of 72. And what it is, basically, it's the rule of doubling money. And if you take 72 and put it into the numerator of your equation, and then you put into the denominator the interest rate or the rate of return you can make on your money, and you do the math, that will tell you how long it will take for your money to double. So if you take 72 and the denominator put 10, and that's your rate of return you're trying to make in the stock market, let's say, do the math, 7.2 is what you get, and that's the number of years it takes to double your money. So if you're 20 years old and you take $1,000 and you put it into an account, in 7 years approximately, it'll be $2,000. Mm-hmm. In 7 more years, it'll be $4,000. And then 7 more years, it'll be $8,000, $16,000, $32,000, $64,000, $128,000. So it's compound growth. And this is a very simple lesson that if young people could see that and understand that, and when they graduate and they get a job and they start having money and they just start setting aside and saving, they can literally be independent financially by retirement if they'll just begin to get that rule of 72, the doubling of money working for them.
And, you know, when you're young and you're starting to do that kind of a thing, it really does matter when you accumulate, let's say, if you could do this, save just very, I think, realistically, and end up with $2,000, let's say, at age 22, and continue to save that money is going to roll. And it may seem like, well, yeah, okay, so $2,000 is not that much. Well, it is.
It is.
And if you start doubling it, like you said,
if you start thinking about $2,000 more spent maybe on a car, maybe I'll spend $2,000 less on that car, and I'll invest that money, just put it into an S&P 500 index fund, just something very basic. That $2,000 could be $100,000 when you reach retirement age.
And if you spend even just a little bit more money adding to that when you're 20 some odd, then
continue adding a little bit every year, of course.
And it's going to just, it's that thing of exponential growth.
Exactly.
Which is different in our minds than just added.
The mind wants to think linear. It doesn't really think exponential.
Yeah.
Linear is like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, exponential is 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. You know,
it's like
that's
that
exponential,
old thing,
right?
It's like that old thing of if I gave you a penny and you doubled it every day and
that's
you realize
that's
very much exponential. And no one would believe when you're starting off that it would ever get to the amounts that it does. I tell you, this is so exciting because I do believe that it is important at whatever age our listeners are today, wherever you are, my friends, it is not too late to start. You might not have 50 years left or 60 years left or 70 years like some 20-year-olds can hope that they have. But whatever it is and wherever you are, you can start this process and get ready for that day. And I'm so grateful that you had us do that. And I'm surprised by just putting money as we have done into a Roth IRA. I'm surprised and shocked out of the last 4 years at how that money has grown just in 4 years.
Yeah, it's the principle of money making money. It's your money working for you. Yeah, we work hard to make money to pay the bills. But if you can start setting money aside, then money can also work for you as well. And that's the principle.
Now, we've got about 3 minutes left here. Tell us about some things that we need to know about COVID.
Well, you know, with the COVID situation, it has created these stimulus checks that we've seen. There have been two stimulus checks paid so far, one last March. There was another one in December, $1,200 and $600 respectively, mm-hmm. paid, you know, to each adult if you had income below these certain levels of income, right? There's a third stimulus check that's on the way. And as we speak, the House of Representatives is in Washington, D.C., is working on this package. And what's being proposed and what it seems like it's going to be, and we'll see once we get to middle March, because that's when it goes to the president's desk for signature, is March the 14th, I think is the goal, is that we're looking at about $1,400 per person being dropped into your checkbook as part of this federal stimulus plan. Hmm. And if you are single and your adjusted gross income on your tax return is below $75,000, you will receive the full $1,400 check. And if you're married filing jointly and your adjusted gross income is below $150,000, then you will receive the full $1,400 per spouse.
And that's quite a little chunk when you're not expecting it.
It is. And they've changed it now so that dependents will also be getting $1,400 as well. So if you have dependents, they will be getting a $1,400 amount. The dependent amounts in the earlier stimulus checks weren't that big, maybe mm-hmm. $500 per dependent. But now mm-hmm. they're talking $1,400 for each dependent. So we'll see how this shapes up in the days to come. But this is something that the listeners should be aware is coming. And I would say this. If you have a situation where your income in 2020 is going up from your 2019 income, that it maybe it's sending you higher than those limits I just mentioned, you may want to hold off on filing your tax return because they will use the 2019 return to do the stimulus checks. If you submit a 2020 tax return and you push yourself into those above those limits I mentioned, then you may get less money or maybe no money at all, and there's no clawback. So if you hold off on filing your return and they send you a nice big check and then you file your return and you have a lot more, they're not going to go, oh, give us that money back. Mm-hmm. And this is what they did last spring, and they're doing it again this spring. So before you file your return, be very careful you don't lose the stimulus money because you are showing higher income
in 2020. And give us those levels one more time.
So for a single filer, if you're below $75,000, you'll get the full $1,400. If you're above $100,000, then you're phased out. Mm-hmm. And between 75 and 100, there's a phase out game that they'll play as to getting not the full 1400, but maybe a little bit less. Mm-hmm. The married filing jointly, it's 150,000. And then you're for anyone eligible, once you're above 150, the phase out begins. Once you're above 200,000, then you're totally phased out. You'll get nothing.
Yeah, right. Well, that's good to know. And people can put that into their planning and think about whether or not they want to do that if they're in those realms of income.
Yeah.
All right, Charlie Fitzgerald, our time is gone, my friend. I can't believe it, but thank you so very much for being here, and we've got to have you back up here to the studio.
Mike, I thoroughly enjoyed this time with you. It's great to see you. The mm-hmm. studio here is awesome. This is such a great setup, mm-hmm. and just thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Well, it's great to have you here.
Friends, in the spirit of full disclosure, I have said a lot of nice things about Charlie as a financial planner and about his company, Moisan Fitzgerald Tamayo. It's important for our listeners to know a couple of things. First, for many years, I've benefited from Charlie's financial planning and investment advice as one of his many pro bono clients. Pro bono means that Charlie has provided his services to me without receiving any form of compensation, and for that I am thankful. And secondly, it's worth noting that neither Charlie or his firm has compensated me or Mark Radio directly or indirectly for this interview today.
And friends, thank you as well. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.